Hello and welcome to episode the 253rd of the Internet's one and only podcast about comic books. You are listening to the soothing tones of the comics podcast. I'm your host, Jean-Luc, and I'm joined by a full house. Everyone's here again. Chad, hello.
Howdy. Alex. My voice is not soothing.
Yeah, depends. It could be soothing.
I think it sounds the best
people.
Of all of us, like your mic and... the voice combo is very, very nice.
Yeah.
Proper that, mic placement, baby.
That's Alex. Emily's also here.
Hello.
Hello, everybody. How's it going?
It's pretty good.
Good.
Yeah. I was only a little hungover this morning, so it was good.
Considering you were very drunk yesterday, I'm proud of you.
I got pretty loaded with my parents. It was fun.
Nice. What did you guys do? Just hang out?
Yep, we listened to random music, we played pool. My brother and my mom played chess for a while.
Who won? Who is chess?
I want to say it's probably my brother. He's pretty good at chess.
Who's the Queen's
Gambit? Yeah.
Yes.
But that, it was just a really, really fun time.
Nice.
I maybe introduced my dad to a couple bands that he probably didn't actually like, but I was drunk and I was like, guess what you're going to listen to right now, because I have the remote.
I do that to my friends, but with anime.
Yeah. I feel like anime is meaner because it takes longer to get through.
Yeah, but sometimes I like to show people weird good anime that makes them upset.
What's your number one upsetty spaghetti anime?
100% Sarah's Anmai. I did not even have to hesitate to think of this because that is the one that I show people without any warning or... any preparation whatsoever. It's another anime by the guy that made Revolutionary Girl Utena. It's his most recent anime. And, you know, I'm not going to say anything because I want to try to force one of you to watch it sometime. But there's...
I Googled it and the third result is Pornhub. So...
I mean, it's not a pornographic anime. It's just... maybe a little bit of a graphic anime.
It's just kind of funny that Googling it, the third result for it is not like watch it on a website or a wiki page, but
well, maybe
page 1613 of Pornhub's most
you know
page.
I feel like that's probably your fault, Jean-Luc, because when I Google Sarah Zanmai, the first three links to come up are Wikipedia, My Anime List, Crunchyroll, and then the Sarah Zanmai wiki.
How's it spelled?
And then, how do you spell Sarah Zanmai?
S-A-R-A.
Oh, okay. Well, I spelled it. I butchered the spelling of it then.
S-A-R-A-Z-A-N-M-A-I.
It's all one word. Okay, yeah. I totally butchered the spelling of that.
Oh, well.
Pornhub is not the third result. Damn. That's unfortunate. Wow. I thought it was just like, I thought you were just talking about a porn anime.
No, this is actually
anime.
I would not call this a safe for work anime, but that doesn't like. I don't mean that in that it's porn. Like, it literally, if you were at work and watching this, there are scenes where if your boss walked up behind you, that would cause some problems, probably.
Which is, you know, it's good
most
that we
anime.
Are mostly a work at home because you know you can watch whatever you want at work now.
Exactly.
I would simply not watch anime at work.
Damn.
I'm built different.
I watched all of Sailor Moon for the first time while I was working a desk job.
Yeah. That's fair. I mean, it's very easy to watch things on the DL when you work a desk job.
Yeah.
So I believe that. But I would not put anime on my screen. I would not want to be
associated
with you people.
Damn.
Slowly but surely. I
don't want to be associated with me people either.
I was going to say, Chad, it's too late for you.
It's not Chad even, is, yeah.
He's the most likely to watch this new show. At least the first person to watch this, I feel. I feel like Chad's going to watch the first episode. He's going to find it interesting.
What's going to happen is when we all finally make our pilgrimage to Chad's house and we all get to hang out in person, that's when I'm going to put on the first episode of Sarah Zanmai and revel in all of your reactions.
See, that just makes me want to watch it to see what the big deal is.
You should absolutely watch it and tell me and Alice all about the experience, because Alice has seen it too.
Well, I gotta finish Sound of the Sky first.
Oh, that's
and
true.
And then watch that other one you wanted me to watch, Wonder Egg Priority.
Oh yeah, that one's actually real good. I mean, Sarazanmite's good too, but like,
that was a great reaction. Oh, that one's actually good.
Yeah, Wonder
that's
Egg
what
is
we're getting into. Huh?
Wonder Egg is more palatably good. Sarazanmite is more weird. No good.
Was Wonder Egg the one we saw the first episode of?
Yeah, I think so. The one with I mean, there's like the egg and like the
lady
girl
with the two different color eyes
hatches out of
and the girl
with the two colored eyes. Yeah.
What a time.
How about you guys? How you guys been this weekend or this week?
I've just been working. I don't know. Nothing too exciting.
Hey, that's what I feel like most of the time we start this show, because my life is also, I've just been working.
Yeah.
I'm that's
to
me
think
too.
Of, like, anything else I did, but like, yeah.
Alex, you watched like a 3-hour Overwatch stream. I know you did that.
Oh yeah, Overwatch. Yeah, yeah. It's going to 5-5.
Not to
five.
Torture the people on this podcast and
it's
the listeners with Overwatch talk.
Yeah, we watched like it was like in the middle of my day on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday.
I think it was Wednesday.
I don't know, some sort of day of the week. So I like took 2 hours off of work and watched it in Discord with some friends, and it was the big Overwatch, like, oh, what are we doing in Overwatch 2 with the player versus player mode? And they open it up and they're like, we're taking out a tank role.
It's a terrible idea.
So now it's one tank, two supports, two DPS, and it's interesting, because like a lot of the reaction I saw was from people who play tank professionally, and they're like, oh, we had no idea, and our careers might be over. And it's like, yeah, well, Overwatch 2 won't be out for another 3 years, so your career will be over by then anyway. It's all good, but yeah. And I've gone back and forth on that thing, and it's been like 3 days where I'm like, oh, that's going to be cool. It's going to be more fun to play. It's going to be more impactful.
No, it won't.
It's 5v5.
It's Overwatch.
But it's like, hey, I kind of like the off-tank, main-tank, like, hey, you guys kind of work together, you synchronize. That's like my favorite part of the game. So it's,
Chad, that was my response exactly while watching this stream was, oh, it's Overwatch.
Yeah, me and some other guys are like, you know, we play a lot of Overwatch. I don't know if we like, I like Overwatch. I'm not sure. I think they have a relation. They have a long-term relationship with Overwatch, but it's more so like, hey, they've been married for 30 years to Overwatch, that they're not going to divorce at this point. Like, it would take something big for them to divorce from Overwatch. And maybe that big thing is going 5v5. I don't know. But
as someone who played a lot of Zarya, I think this is also a shitty thing for off-tank players, because I prefer to play off-tanks instead of main tanks, but like,
yeah,
Zarya doesn't work very well unless you have a main tank to bubble and you know,
yeah,
offset the her lack did of you, tanking abilities. Like,
did you see her like her rework for Overwatch 2?
No.
So she still has two bubbles, but she can use them both on herself. So it's like a bubble pool. She could use both of them on a teammate, like, you know, back to back, so two people could be bubbled, or she could give herself a bubble then give herself another bubble, so she's got more bubble time.
That's interesting. I will not play Overwatch 2 unless someone buys it for me, which is how I played Overwatch 1.
That's how Jean-Luc played Overwatch 1, I think. Maybe not.
You and Cameron are...
Oh yeah, I you know, if Cameron plays the game, I have a feeling you're going to play the game, and I think we'll play together for at least a bit, so
I don't know. That's usually how that goes.
And like, Winston has a long range lightning attack that he can like snipe people with.
I don't know, so if I like that.
Yeah, so they're like clearly making it so that the tanks have more brawly agency kind of thing. But I don't know, like the stream they showed was like players who played in like plat and they weren't very good, or like worse. So it's hard to see like how it works in the high levels, how it works in the low levels. Like,
how many more
stuns
does McCree have?
And they talked about getting rid of flashbang for Overwatch 2, like in the 2-hour thing. They're like, yeah, we've been rethinking stuns. Mei no longer freezes people with her ice spread. It just slows them down.
Aw, lame as a Mei player. Also, yeah, right? If they removed all the stuns and reworked it based on that, they could probably make a much more compelling shooter.
Yeah.
That I wouldn't want to like throttle like a annoying dog or something. I don't know.
Yeah,
I lost the metaphor there halfway through.
Because they showed Mei, they showed, they talked about McCree maybe losing the stun, but then they had someone play Doomfist and he was just the same. So it was like, huh, that's kind of, It's kind of the big stun guy, so I don't know. We don't know. We don't know when it's coming out. We don't really know what's going on, but yeah, 5v5. At least it's different. So we'll see. You're right. That was the highlight of my week, Jean-Luc, and that's very sad.
It is a little sad that that was the highlight of your week. And I don't even mean that from a, like, I don't like Overwatch perspective. I just mean that from, like, if your highlight was watching a Twitch stream, that's a bad sign.
I watched it on YouTube, but it doesn't make it any better.
Yeah. Same thing. Semantical. Same. Yeah. Pure How semantics. Me?
It was your birthday bash this week.
Oh, yeah.
Happy birthday!
It was my birthday this week. That's true. Thank you. I'm 24 now. 24 feels like it sucks. It's gonna suck.
I hate to break it to you, but like, that's how it's gonna feel forever.
No, 25 might be big.
No, that's just, yeah, I mean, I know that. It's just life under capitalism to an extent.
Yes.
If it makes you feel any better. I didn't figure my shit out until I was like 27 or 28.
Oh, I figured my shit out like 2 years ago, so.
I've talked with you. I don't think you figured your shit out.
Yeah, I don't know that I would say I feel like you figured your shit out.
I don't know. Jean-Luc is hosting a podcast that has over 250 episodes.
And not many people. Exactly that many listeners collectively throughout the whole thing.
Not too bad. Not too bad.
And you lost one when you brought me onto the show because I don't listen anymore.
Ooh, Emily. Oh, sorry, but we do need those listeners. So,
Oh, just like God. Well, I was going to, this is a segue to a comic that we will talk about later, but just like Death, I have been fired and will be reassigned to a new body as Layla Starr.
I mean, we could talk about it now. There were a decent number of comics this week.
Yeah, I had to read a shitload today, too. So if we want to dig in, I'm totally fine.
I want to know.
All we have is Overwatch.
I want to know what Chad thought about the Olivia Rodrigo song that I got him to listen to before we get into comics.
It was fine. I enjoyed the revival of like pop punk. I was never really into it when it was like first big and I was in middle school and high school. But like all these songs are like still like really nostalgic because I never could get away from it, right? Like you'd walk through the mall and you'd hear like pop punk and now it's like, oh, it's back. And some of these songs are like legitimately really good. Young Blood is great. Mod Sun, some of his stuff's pretty good. This song was fine. I like the verses a lot more than the refrain. I hate the guitar tone they're using in it. It's so... It's so safe and boring and like bright, but the song itself, like, because there's some really nice dark tones in the verses, and it gets like bright. It's like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, I kind of get the contrast thing, but there's got to be a better way than this shitty guitar tone. otherwise, it was a fun enough song. Like, I probably listen to it again, but I didn't hate that I listened to it today.
I'm glad.
Disney star was it that made this song?
Her name is Olivia Rodrigo. She was in a show called Bizardvark and is currently in a show, High School Musical, The Musical, The Series.
I have heard of High School Musical, The Musical, The Series.
Yeah, she's in that. And this is her debut album. And a lot of people have been speculating that she could be an industry plant. I have not really seen much evidence.
God, I don't care.
It's the music
industry. It's such transparent bullshit already. It doesn't fucking matter if like the record label is like, we're going to hire you to do a song. Like that literally happens everywhere, including the United States. But people get up in fucking arms about it here for whatever god-awful reason. Like we have goddamn standards when we clearly do not.
What's an industry plant?
It's when like a record industry or like when an industry figure like a record company takes somebody and like basically manufactures a career for them out of whole cloth. And so they usually come out of the gate with like a super produced album and website and merch and stuff like that. And I can see why people might feel that way about Olivia Rodrigo. I don't know that I necessarily think that's the case. I think she's just well connected because she has been working for Disney for several years. And I don't know why there are so many publications talking about this album, but I don't know. I'm digging it. A lot of it's the album, like Good For You, which is the song that I had Chad listen to, is not 100% representative of the album as a whole. I would say a lot of it is more like some early Taylor Swift stuff, which makes sense because Olivia Rodrigo has been very vocal about Taylor Swift being an influence on her music. But I started listening to the album yesterday and have just sort of been like, idly, anytime I need like background music for something, I've been gravitating back towards it. So I've been enjoying it. It's a good, it's like a, the album's really not very long. It's like 11 songs, like it's like 30, 45 minutes long.
Also, God bless Pop Punk for bringing back shorter fucking albums. I swear to God, every stupid pop album I listen to that I'm like, I'm excited for this. Oh, it's 55 minutes.
Yeah, this
Why
is,
are you doing this to me?
This is a relatively short album, and I also think that works in its favor because it doesn't overstay its welcome. It's a relatively inoffensive pop album made by a 17-year-old who I hope has a bigger career ahead of her.
Yeah.
Nice. Jean-Luc, did you end up watching the Bad Batch episode 4 yesterday?
Yeah, I did.
How's that
right.
Bad Batch doing?
It's still good. It's like definitely, it's settled into a groove of like, you know, we're just doing a bunch of one-offs. It's not as like engaging as the first couple episodes. But I don't know, like I don't have like any big takeaways from it or anything. It's still good. It's just like settling into a groove, I think, before, you know, it gets into some more plot stuff. It's good though. I'm enjoying it.
I had Gwen download the first couple episodes, and I have not watched them yet, but I plan on it.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah, like the first two, or like the first one is the oversized. It's the strongest one for me so far. But it's also the most going on. You learn a lot. You get post Order 66 right in the fallout. So it's good. If this was like an 8-episode or 9-episode thing, I'd be a bit more down on this episode as like a quote unquote filler kind of thing. But I like the Bad Batch. they're lovely.
They're fun.
Yeah, and that's something that I wasn't expecting going in.
I love Echo's bit of like of he puts on the mask. It's like beep boop. I'm a droid. I thought that was very funny.
Yeah, that's good. It feels very Clone Wars. Not the strongest Clone Wars yet, but I'm excited for more.
Yeah, so am I. Y'all want to talk about some comics now?
Sure,
do it.
I think Emily was teasing the Many Deaths of Layla Starr number 2.
Yeah,
which came out this week. Do you want to kick us off on that one then?
Yeah, I like this comic. I don't, I think this came out during one of the weeks that I had to miss the show, so I didn't actually end up reading the first issue. So,
oh yeah, that's right.
I read both issues 1 and 2 earlier today, and nice. You know, I'm really digging this. I'm a fan. I like the art style. I'm invested in Death's beef with a literal child. I don't know. It's very interesting, and I had a joy of a time reading it. What about anyone else?
I like the crow.
You would.
That's not a surprise. I think we said this when the first issue came out, but I am just getting really intense Day Tripper vibes off of this.
Oh yeah. You know, now that you say that, that totally makes sense.
Both in terms of like the art style being like, I mean, it's, I think the artist name is Felipe Andrade and it's fantastic. I like when I say that it like feels evocative of like Fabio Moon and Gabriel Ba, that is a very high compliment. It's colored really beautifully, but like right down to like the structure of like, oh, she's going to die at the, like, I sort of didn't think that's the direction we were going. We're like that she was going to die at the end of every issue. Although the title sort of should have implied that, I think, but now that she died at the end of this year, I'm like, oh, we're doing that. Okay. That's cool. And obviously it's a little, it's not exactly the same thing, but it's the same sort of like, let's look at, take these like snapshots of a life over the course of however many years, right? Mm-hmm. And it's not even her life, right? Like, she is sort of just she's like an observer. I was going to say a neutral observer. She's very much not a neutral observer.
It definitely feels like Ramvee was a fan of Day Tripper. Like, he's read it and he's like, I'm going to do my own story like it, or like sort of in that same thing. Maybe not. Maybe this completely came out of just like being like, I want to tell this story, but it's...
I mean, it's a really neat narrative trick. It's not like Day Tripper was the first thing to do this. I mean, like, arguably, like, Boyhood is probably the most, like, highly publicized version of this. But, like, going in and, like, just being, like, surgically being like, okay, we're going to cut this small part out of this person's life, and we're going to show you that, and then over the course of however many issues, we're going to see how that, like, affects her development as a person, right? Mm-hmm. And in this case, I thought that it was, like, a really touching story about how the kid whose name is escaping me,
Darius,
yeah. His parents are like some kind of like business magnates, and this issue is about his relationship with a servant that they had, and the sort of like childlike way that he interfaces with that, of like the very innocent way of like not understanding like the relations of production and being like, this is a person. Why are we treating him as, you know, subhuman in some way? And that is, I mean, that it's like, it's cliche to a degree, but I think it's very well executed here and very touching. And I love the way that that character is drawn as well. Having like being very tall, having like those really like big, long arms. It's very like evocative, like how, you know, an 8-year-old would see somebody like that.
Yeah, it's like a larger than life, sort of like almost like a fantastical being, but like a human, but like
it's really cool. It's really good. Like, it's really good sort of like characterization through the way that that character is designed. So I also really like some of the funeral stuff that goes on in this this issue as well. Where they're sort of, I mean, the crow is the funeral crow of some kind.
Yeah.
And the whole issue is like oriented around, you know, the goddess of death, Layla, sort of interacting with this kid at a funeral. And, you know, about the ways that like they view death very differently. So
I'm curious too, because she interacted with a ghost in the first issue and now we got a crow in this one. Like, if they're going to continue on like introducing that kind of stuff, right? You know, are we going to get personifications of like, I don't know, grave dirt or you know, what else can she interact with that would be natural symbolize but that. Not repeat itself? Yeah,
right.
Because like, I've really enjoyed the ghost and the crow. Like, those were great like things for her to bounce dialogue off of and like learn from.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, I think so. I think so as well. Just a lot of like perspective stuff going on there. That's really good. I love the page where she dies at the end with the hand coming out and pulling her underwater, like an undercurrent of some kind. I thought that was like a really stunningly good page. There's a lot of really good shit in this book. I'm really enjoying it. Ramvee continues his sort of, you know, explosion of writing good comics.
I'm not sure when he started writing comics, but it feels like he started like late last year or something, or, you know, mid last year, and suddenly he's
fantastic. Or at least that's when his breakout was, right?
For sure, yeah.
I'm sure he wrote stuff before Blue and Gold, but he sort of very clearly has had like a breakout within the last like, or Blue and Green, has had a breakout in the last 6 months or so with, you know, Catwoman,
Swamp Thing,
this, obviously Death of Layla Starr. He's writing the Justice League. He's writing the backup in Justice League, stuff like that. So
is Boom Studios also the publisher for Grant Morrison's book, or is that someone else?
Yeah, Proctor Valley Road. Yeah,
it's a good year for Boom Studios so far.
Boom Studios consistently, like, I mean, they sort of for us have sort of flown under the radar, I think, for the last few years. But they consistently do put out like good stuff, like yeah. in that vein. Mm-hmm. Another Boom Studios book that came out this week that we've been reading is Luna. The fourth issue of that dropped this week by Maria Lovett.
This book is so horny, but like it's fine.
Yeah,
horny but fine.
I liked this issue.
I would not dispute either of those things. I think that this is I think the last issue we did not like very much. I remember it being very like. Very exposition heavy. This one I did like a fair bit more because it feels like it gets back to the character focus of the first couple issues. And that is good. I just feel like, and I felt this way, like in the first issue it was sort of excusable because it's the first issue, but I felt this way basically the whole time that like I'm not really 100% sure exactly what's going on. Like I get that, like, okay, so there's this guy, he has some sort of sway over he lives out in the desert and has this sway over these women because he's drugging them with something. But there's also this whole like supernatural angle that despite the entire last issue being devoted to explaining what that was, I still don't quite understand the connection. And so in this issue, when it sort of gets literalized in a way where like last time it was like it felt like it, a lot of it happened like in a vision while she was having sex. In this issue, it's like the that guy whose name I can't remember is like, I have to go kill the blue man, and she's like, no, the blue man can't die. And my basic response was, the blue man's real? ?
Yeah. Yeah, I like the idea that sex was so good that she thought about a different guy the entire time.
That's how it works, Chad.
That's what you do when you're just having great sex. You just think about other people.
Yeah, it's like a... No, I'm not going to finish that. But,
Coward.
What was I going to say? It's like, okay, like, obviously a lot of this book is like, hey, there's some trippy shit going on. And, like, even though they've been explaining the things that are going on, I'm, like, not really convinced... Like you said, Jean-Luc, but like, what's really going on? What the crux of this story is? Why should I care? Other than, hey, it's a horny book with really gorgeous artwork, like gorgeous, gorgeous, gorgeous artwork. But we're four issues in, and it's like, is that all this book is gonna be?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing I was gonna get to is that like this book looks fucking amazing. At basically every page, like it's so stylized and it looks really good and. There's so much emoting that goes on with the characters. Like there are pages where like some of the other characters are like being shut out of this person's life and they're like really fucked up about it. And it comes across in their facial expressions. And then the main character has these few scenes where she's like crying, looking out the window. And it's like, you feel it, or at least I felt it, right? Like, the art was like so effective that it made me like, you know, empathize with those emotions. It's just that like, as soon as you sort of get out of that, like, you know, sort, I guess euphoric state of like only looking at the art, it becomes very like, okay, wait, what is it that I'm caring about again? And then it ends with the blue man coming to get her, I guess. It's hard to say.
Maybe it's real.
It feels like one of those things that like I kind of want to stick with it because it feels like one of those things where there's going to be some kind of twist with like what has been going on this whole time, and that will ideally have made the whole thing like worth reading and sticking with. And if not, it, like, you know, we've said it's gorgeous, so at least there's that.
The art is definitely the strongest thing in this book. I don't really know how I feel about the ride that it has been taking me on, but like, I don't know, like there are other comics this week that I read that like made me feel like my brain was leaking out of my ears, and this one didn't make me feel like that. So
what comic made you feel like your brain was leaking out of your ears?
Ultra Mega, or whatever the fuck that comic is called.
Oh yeah,
yeah, I guess we'll get to it, but I just didn't really care for it. It's just kind of dumb.
Okay.
Get to it right now.
We can get to it right now.
Okay, exactly. Yeah. I just thought it was kind of dumb. Like,
yeah, it's dumb as fuck.
I have not been impressed with any issue of Ultra Mega so far, and this just is not, or this continues that trend of just being kind of like, I don't know, it felt like a chore to read almost.
Like, I really like some of the character expressions, like when they're wearing their, like, big face mask thing.
Oh yeah, some of the art in this book I think is really cool and really solid. I don't know, like, the whole story has really not grabbed me at all.
Yeah.
There's so many flaws with this issue, like, it's like, oh shit, we're doing 50-page issues. I guess I have to commit to that because this doesn't need to be 50 pages. There's a lot of weird shit. Like, I think I was like on page 12 and I was like, I don't know what the fuck is happening. Like, it's being incoherent for no goddamn reason when there's clearly like a story thesis going on that we could just follow. Because the kid in the arena was kind of fun until he was actually good at fighting for whatever reason. Like, that's super not believable that he was able to do any of that other than, I guess it's based off kind of like, you know, anime.
The writer who says that they've never seen anime but wanted to do an anime book?
I think so.
Correct, yes.
Okay.
And that shows, believe me.
Yeah. This is just such a weird, stupid comic. And I, like, read this one, and I might not read the next one because I don't care anymore.
I don't think I recommend any writer to do 50-page issues. Like, I don't know. It's just like,
yeah,
I understand if it's like, hey, if it's like a 2 or 3 issue thing and you're doing some oversized stuff, but if that's like your series where you're just doing like long stuff and it's mostly like incoherent or jumbled and all over the place, it's like, huh. Like, even if you're Jeff Lemire, you could do it. I would read it all. Never mind.
Yeah, Jeff Lemire could write a kaiju book.
Yeah, but he'd just make it like an original graphic novel and like give it all out at one time. He's you know, smart guy. Kind guy. Maybe.
Benevolent.
Yeah.
It's hard to write 50-page issues and...
Yeah.
Because, especially when they're really dense with things happening, it's hard to like keep people invested for that time, I guess. I don't know. But
like, it's kind of neat. I don't know. Like, it's kind of impressive. Hey, you did like a 50-page book, and like the artist for sure. Like, damn, that's a lot of pages. Like, I hope they got paid well for it. Cause like,
me too.
I don't know.
I feel like the artist does definitely deserve like all of the pay and all of the praise here. Because like, if it were not for the art, like, this would have been much more of a slog to read.
Well, it's the same guy. It's James Herron does both.
Well, then maybe you should stick to...
He's done this to himself.
Maybe you should stick to drawing and not writing.
But you're right, Emily. He does get all the pay.
I mean, yeah, I guess so. Maybe this is a cautionary tale against artist writer books.
Yeah.
I don't know. Just some artists, I think, are just not great storytellers, and I think that that's okay. I think it's okay for different people to have different skills.
Yeah, and I think there is maybe a story here, but it's so, I still don't like know what the main thesis is, right? Like, the first issue was a 50-page prologue. Now we have two normal issues that are advancing a story about this kid, but I don't really know what like any of the goals are. I don't know enough to care or want to know more.
Yeah.
And we're 3 issues in, and they're all really long. And so there's a certain level of, like, I guess you guys have just been wasting my time. Which, fair enough, like, you did it.
Yeah, it's just tough when you're 100, like, when you're 100 page, 150 pages in, and, like, it sort of feels like nothing has happened.
Yeah.
Like, obviously, a lot happens in the first issue, but...
And it's interesting to compare it to Luna, two books that are like, hey... You know, we're 3 or 4 issues in, not a lot has happened, but and the art is good in both of them, but I feel much better about Luna than I do
too.
About
well, Luna takes like 6 minutes to read.
Right.
And that also. Yeah, I guess maybe part of why I find it harder to read this is because it is so long. Like, it just feels like it hasn't earned 50-page issues.
Well, that's the thing is, like, I mean, I've talked about this a little bit since, like, the most recent DC relaunch, in that, like, I actively, like, want to read, like, decent superhero comics, right? Because, like, I like superhero comics, and if they're okay, at least okay, I can read a 22-page superhero comic in 15 minutes and feel like, yeah, that was like a fun way to spend time. But when you extend that to 50 pages, much like when you extend that experience to like a 2-hour movie or something, it's a very different, like, it's a very different level of investment that you have to have. So, like, if Ultra Mega, if we were on issue 3 and, like, you know, they were normal sized issues and we'd like just got out of in the and this was the first, like, quote unquote real issue, because the first two would have been a prologue, then maybe we would feel differently about it.
Yeah, absolutely. But
obviously we don't live in that world, so there's no way of really knowing.
You know what world we do live in is one where Stray Dogs is on issue 4. What did you guys think of this fucking wacky ass story?
I can't believe they made it. You know, it's good for the dogs. Good for the dogs. Well,
I can't believe we made it.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
didn't put this on the list, so I forgot to read it.
Oh, do you care if we talk
about
it?
No, you can spoil it.
So
I don't
really
care that much. I didn't dislike this comic, but
so the first like 18 or 19 pages is the dog still kind of jerking off about whether the bad guy is a bad guy or not, what they should do. It's like it's drawing that out, but the artwork is still really cute. I like the facial expressions. They end up going into the shed and they find the Dalmatian has been like skinned and is just
that took a
fucking
turn.
Body is like hanging from the rafters. And when I saw that, I was like, are you fucking shitting me? Like,
it's not a twist. That's what they thought in issue 1.
Yeah.
Like,
and I didn't want to say like I laughed, but it's so dark and stupid that it had zero horrifying effect on me, right?
Oh, I didn't laugh at that. What I did laugh at is the scene right before the end of the book when I think his name is Earl, the brown dog with the big floopy ears. And there's a page where like the guy comes in and murders his owner, who is also a young woman. And then the next panel is him as a puppy, like strapped into the seat. And it's so cute and adorable. And the scene before it is like him eating a treat while his owner gets fucking murdered with a unicorn poster in the background. This book has no idea what it's doing. Like, tonally. Not in the slightest.
I mean, it doesn't. It kind of feels like one of those predictive text things, except it doesn't go crazy enough in either direction. Where, like, in the first issue, we had the conversation where we're like, oh, this guy is just, like, straight up, you know, murdering owners and then, like, taking the dogs, doing bad things to dogs. That's the book. And that's what it is. That's where we're at. Issue 4. But it was played up as a mystery in every issue.
Right.
The dogs kept forgetting things, but as readers, we didn't forget things, so...
Yeah.
Right.
They didn't even keep forgetting things. Like, that premise got used... comes up only when it's useful to the plot.
Yeah.
Like otherwise, they seem to remember things.
And there's, like, a breakthrough moment where the dog's like, I remember! What do you remember? And then it's like, oh, I don't know. Okay. Nice.
And then the serial killer man, apparently, like, he keeps all the pictures of the women he kills, but then he keeps all the dogs he's killed, too. He just keeps their heads, like, mounted in a closet.
Yeah.
And I don't know what I'm supposed to do with that. Like, it's just so cartoonishly unbelievable that it's stupid. Like, I'm just baffled.
Well, yeah, and it's not like the dogs are, like, interesting on their own. Like, because all they really talk about is, like, my owners. What was our life like back then? Like, their whole reason for being is talking about this mystery that we already know the answer to, it seems like. So it's not even like, hey, these dogs are interesting and they got their own personalities and it's kind of cool that that's going on. It's a weird book. I don't know how this is a thing. But
I imagine it'll be over. Yeah, next issue is the final issue. I'm curious, like, what's the end goal for this, right? So they'll probably kill the owner, but then what are they going to do? Like, someone's got to come and rescue the dogs from the house, or they're just going to starve to death.
Well, then if you're a dog who kills an owner, you're just going to be put down. Like,
that's true.
Like, if the owner shows up dead and there's all those dogs, they're going to be like, don't know.
Yeah, and then that, but then the house is gonna have to be put on the market, and they're gonna have people come in and find all the like skinned dogs and pictures of women who presumably went missing. Like, you know.
So you're saying there's gonna be a second mini series with the investigation going on?
God, I hope not. Yeah. And if there is, I'm not reading it.
The thing is that sounds like a way more interesting story than this one.
Yeah.
Did we just get suckered in by the dogs? Like, is that what happened?
I think. Well, yeah, absolutely. I think that's what this book is banking on, is that you see lots of cute dogs, because admittedly, Tony Fleeks or I don't know if Tony Fleeks actually draws this, but whoever draws this, whose name Trish Forstner, who draws this, draws very cute dogs. And that for some people is enough, and it's led us to reading four issues of this.
I'm just looking at the previous Theon, and I'm looking at the dog names. One of them's like called like Imogene, one of them's called like Gucci.
One of them's called Emoji.
Imogene, not Emogene.
Oh.
One of them's called Henry. One of them's called Other Henry, and it's like that's like the names have personalities. These dogs could have personalities.
I would probably watch a cartoon about this. I don't know that it works in comic form.
I don't know that it would work in.
It would need some retooling, but like
would need a story.
I feel like I don't know. This would probably work better as like a cartoon with like maybe more like gags and like the attempting to be serious story underneath.
If you keep the dogs and get rid of the murdery man, I think it could be like the style is like, oh, this feels like a cartoon dog show. Cool.
It reminds me of like Pound Puppies, which was a cartoon show at one point, I guess. I think it would have been right at the midpoint between when Chad was watching cartoons and when Alex would have been watching cartoons, and that's where I am. I don't say John Luke because John Luke grew up watching French expressionist cinema and not anything that was suitable for children.
Okay.
Wow, you think fresh expressionist cinema is not suitable for children? Never too young.
It's true that I did not watch a lot of cartoons growing up, but...
And it shows.
Yeah, I guess. In the sense that, like, I'm not a 23-year-old who's obsessed with cartoons.
You're
like,
right, you're a 24-year-old.
Who's obsessed with Legos and Star Wars.
Yeah.
John Luke, I'm 28. You don't have to talk Legos about are... me like this, like I'm not here.
Legos are made for adults now. There's a whole 18-plus line.
Oh, my God. That was the highlight of my week, actually. That was a...
When you went on the Toys R Us website and went to the Lego part of it, and there was an 18-plus portal that was just, like, it was, like, City, Star Wars, Ninjago, and then just, like, a black box that said 18-plus on it.
Check the chat. Like, I was expecting to click on this Lego thing and to be like, oh, it's going to be like, it's going to be porn Lego. That's what it's going to be. Like,
it does say
like,
adults welcome.
Adults welcome. It's 18 plus. It's black. All it says is Lego. Adults welcome. And it's a black background. And like, you click on it and it's like, it's the Star Wars the Star Wars Cantina. And it's like, oh, okay.
It is really funny.
Oh, I thought
and, like,
that was the LGBT flag one, because I know that's like an 18 plus set that came out this week.
I think that one is in it, yeah.
That's not out yet, but yeah.
And it's like it is sets that are like not built to play with, I guess. Like it's ones that are like a bit more...
Yeah, it's display pieces.
Yeah, it's like the helmet and stuff, but it's such a weird way to like...
It's a weird... The 18 plus is a weird framing, yes. But adults, they make Legos for adults now, believe it or not.
Damn, you have to throw out all your other ones though, Jean-Luc. The ones that aren't in that tab.
Yeah.
The Pride Lego set's kind of
like
cute.
That?
Yeah.
Why would they use a black box?
The Pride Lego set is kind of cute.
You have to verify your age like when you press it too. It's a whole thing. It's just oof.
I also do kind of like the Pride Lego set. I think it's kind of corny, but it's cute.
It is. It's like a very much a corporate like, we like gay people.
Yeah.
I don't
like
know.
The colors work better. Like the colors work nice. Like on the right side, you have like the sort of like trans flag going on, and like
it's got like the combined colors of the prog what is called the progress flag and also the trans flag. I think it's cute. I have a friend that works at Lego and like customer service and has been having to deal with like.
Oh,
people
God.
Calling in about
I'm canceling my Lego subscription.
Right?
I will never buy another brick.
It's one of those things that is like it's like pandering, but it's like they put a little bit more effort into it than every other corporate entity.
Yeah.
That
I mean, it's not like
shows.
Skittles who are like, yeah. We're getting rid of all the colors because I don't know why. We got rid of the colors because we're going to focus on your colors.
We so got rid of the colors because someone suggested it and we just kind of ran with it.
It's like you're getting rid of LGBTQ+. Is that like
Skittles, the face of LGBTQ extermination.
Like, what?
Jesus Christ.
Damn. I could go for some Skittles now, though. So
this episode is about Skittles.
Oh, there were some more comics that came out this week.
Mm-hmm. Man, there's Nightwing and there's Javier. I think it's Javier Pulido. Might not be actually. I'm not sure who does the art on it. But
Fernando Blanco.
Is it Fernando Blanco?
No, that's Catwoman. Nightwing is Bruno Redondo.
From Injustice. Yeah. Redondo. I just love. He does a great job of like creating these little like dioramas in the pages where like things are sort of moving and it's like sort of a zoomed out thing and it's so charming and but I also just like the issue of Nightwing.
That like bird's eye view shot of his apartment is really good.
Yeah.
There's a lot of cool stuff like that. I love the moment it's when so Tim Drake shows up in this issue, Nightwing brings him in to help him out. And there's that moment where they like Tim Drake is like in the tent city, but they're sort of he's talking to Nightwing over the over the communicator, and they're talking about you know Barbara who's also on the line that Tim Drake doesn't know about, but there's like there's the moment where Nightwing goes like, can we talk about something else, like the potential serial killer cutting out people's hearts, and I'm like, no. I want to know about. I would much rather know about the Bat family drama. Please keep going.
And then I'm on this line too. Can we please stop talking about?
Yeah, this? And admittedly, this series has done, and then it like becomes like a superhero fight, and the action scene looks really good. I don't want to like take away from that because I think Bruno Redondo's like action scenes are fantastic, but it's one. It's definitely like this is exactly like. One of my issues is with superhero comics sometimes. Like, there's all this interesting character drama. I don't give a shit about the supervillain. Make him go away. I don't care. I love the moment when Tim Drake gives Nightwing, like, a wallet protector from Batman. Like, I just love that. It's so good. And that's, like, this is, like, the first time in a while that feels like realizing the potential of that early, like, detective, like, Tinian's Detective Comics and like the pre New 52, like Bat Family stuff that I really loved. Whether it was like Morrison on like Batman and Robin or his Batman run or that Stephanie Brown Batgirl book. Like this feels like a return to like 2010 Bat Family stuff. And and I mean that in like a very good way.
And there's like the opening where the guys are like, oh, you killed this guy, it was you. And he's like, and Nightwing's like so chill about it. He's like, okay, let me just call Barbara. And it's like, I love their relationship. It's such a bright superhero fun relationship book for one that's like about a guy who like is killing homeless people and taking out their hearts. Like it's Emily and Shaw, did you guys read this?
There's a lot of there's a lot of fun stuff in this. I feel like it's balancing mostly what it wants to do pretty well.
Yeah.
I really like how they're handling Nightwing and kind of continuing to contrast him with Batman and some of the other characters in the Bat family. It's just really well executed. I'm kind of on board with genre. I prefer the Bat drama to the superhero stuff, but both are done really well. So like It's fine. Like, it's cool. Like, there's some shitty superhero stuff that came out this week that we can get to. This is not one of them.
Yeah. Well, it doesn't feel like one is happening at the expense of the other necessarily, right? Like, it's good. It's not like it's not like, oh, we're not doing the like character stuff because, you know, we have to have 10 pages of an action scene. It's like, okay, we can have a 4-page action scene and, you know, and still make room for all
this. It seems like they want to actually have this action. Like, it seems like in the book they were like, yeah, I want to show off like the bright colors and have a little bit of a fight because we like what we're doing, as opposed to like, hey, it's a superhero comic, let's fight.
Yeah. No, it's really good. I fucking love this book so much. I know it's only 3 issues so far, but it's been fantastic.
Yeah.
Chad, what was the shitty superhero stuff that you read this week?
Can I guess?
Yeah, you should guess, and then I guess I'll have to look at the list just because I don't fucking remember what it was called.
He doesn't remember, but I think it's going to be the Fantastic Four book.
I didn't read that one.
Well, there we go.
Well, that one was pretty bad, so you dodged a bullet.
I'm going to guess Home.
Yeah, that's a decent guess.
Yeah.
I read Home, and I don't remember what it was about.
You didn't like it because that's what you said in our group chat.
The fuck was Home?
It's the immigrant kid with superpowers.
Oh, got superpowers. And
yeah.
And this week he runs away to the restaurant and then calls his aunt, and then it turns out that his mom got deported to Guatemala.
So,
and his dad had superpowers before him also.
Yeah, yeah, of course. Superpowers. wonderful.
I bet if you're like younger, and this book is probably pretty good because you get to like, you know, there's that whole thing with like, we need more inclusion within our superheroes so kids can see themselves in superheroes, right? Like, they're not just like white males. And so, like, I think there's a really good place for this in the market, and it's not me. I would prefer to strip away the superpowers and then just have this be like a really emotional kind of, not quite a thriller, but, you know, like a lit fiction kind of thing about our immigration system and a kid working his way through it and separation. Like, but it's not that. It's not trying to be that anymore. Probably never was. I won't continue reading this, I don't think, but I do think, like, for the people who want this kind of comic, it's probably really good and will make them happy.
Yeah.
Well, that was nice, fair. Chad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was a very measured response to this.
I agree.
Yeah. I am done with this book. But
I think I will continue to read it out of curiosity, but like, I also think that it would maybe be a better book without the superhero stuff. But I think Chad has a really good point about like, this book isn't for me as a reader, and I'm like okay with that. So like, I'm gonna probably keep reading it, but
yeah, it's not for enfranchised comic book readers, which is why it's being published by Image Comics in a weekly format, where you have to go to a specific store and order it 3 months in advance.
Just because the ordering process is a hassle, that doesn't necessarily mean.
No, I'm not saying that changes the audience, what the intended audience is. Yeah. I'm saying those two things, the intended audience does not like grok with the
execution
method. Yeah, it's like, feels like this should have been like a first second book or like a first second graphic novel that went directly into bookstores or something.
You know, actually,
yeah,
that, I agree with you there for sure.
But yeah.
Oh, what, the one I didn't like was Wonder Girl.
Oh, what a shock.
I actually kind of liked this one.
Really?
If I found myself in a position where a big mermaid hooked me by the neck and drug me under the water and held me in her big, beautiful arms, I would simply let her.
Yeah, and it takes 20 pages to get to a good scene, and the 19 before it sucked.
I don't know. It's gorgeous, gorgeous, gorgeous book that admittedly is very light on plot.
Forgot this was a one-shot because honestly, like...
It's not a one-shot.
This is
an ongoing.
Okay, yeah. I think maybe I just misheard something one of you said. So I thought you said it was a one-shot. And I was like, that's weird. But this is kind of light on plot. And we could have spent way less time on the trip over.
Yeah, I mean it's basically just a showcase of, hey, Joel Jones can really draw. Like there's even a page where it's like, hey, you want to see Joel Jones draw your some random, you know, DC superhero, like there's
Nope.
Nightwing, Catwoman, and I'm all for that. I'm like, great. I don't have any thoughts on this issue other than I like the art, and I don't know if this will be a good book going forward. I think Joel Jones is also writing it, and
Yes, she
I read her.
is.
I read a lot of her Catwoman run, and probably farther than I really should have because I didn't really enjoy it at all. But man, can she draw?
This has the exact same strengths and weaknesses as her Catwoman run, where in the sense that Joelle Jones is a great artist and her art looks fantastic. And also she writes characters who just blabber about their backstory for no fucking reason for entire
To a
pages, you know?
stranger on the
I'm, yeah,
bus.
Hey, he's a hot stranger on the bus.
No, the
Oh,
first it's on the
baby.
airplane and then it's on the bus. It's like
Well, she's just very trusting, and that's what Wonder Girl is all about. Yeah.
this character just feels so fake. Like this character reads like she was born yesterday, and maybe she was, but that like it doesn't. It's she's not interesting to read. She's like the most like naive, like boring character you could possibly conceive of. And also the influencer scene was really weird.
Oh, that's bad.
Don't you want to be famous?
Felt
It's also like.
extraneous.
Yeah, like not only is it cringe to put that in a book like this, it's also just like doesn't it doesn't read like an influencer either. Like they don't really like they don't talk like that really. It's like a very caricatured like this is what influencers sound like. Influencers sound way worse than that, my friend. They are way more
They don't
cringe.
open up with, hey, it's your boy Kevin back with another episode of Kicking It with Kevin, talking to those trips so you know where
No,
to
I
go.
actually I liked his little intro of Kicking It with Kevin because that did kind of make me laugh, but the rest of it like was just sort of
Yeah. I did not like this.
I am interested enough that I may read another issue, but like I don't have high hopes for it, I guess. I did. Alex is right. I liked the art. I feel like the, I don't know. I was. I don't know if I've read any books by this artist before, but I enjoyed the visual experience, if not necessarily the everything about the overall experience. Because boy, like there was just so much exposition in this. Felt like we had to really hoof it in these personal conversations with people who we've never met before.
Yeah.
We're at an hour, so I don't know. Do you wanna chug through two more comics that sucked? Because those would be Shang-Chi and Legends of the No, not Legends, Rangers of the Divide. I don't know if either of you read either of those.
Rangers of the Divide was really rough to get through them.
I did not get through either of those. I stopped about.
I say to say that I read Rangers of the Divide was kind of charitable.
Art.
Yeah, the art was good. I just thought it was kind
No,
of
the art
boring.
reminded me of
The
like.
animals were good,
The
I
animals were
think.
good. The people reminded me of like a slightly high tier webcomic that I
You
would pay money
know,
for.
I was kind of trying to figure out what vibe it gave me, and web comic is right there.
It's like they have a great grasp of like these creatures and like drawing them. And it like clearly that's where their energy and time went into, it seems like. And then the rest of it is like talking heads, boring people, and this the, like the leader guy in blood is just like, oh,
Yeah.
I hate him. I hate him.
It just re it to me it just felt like it's fairly typical like young adult fare, but like it really needed like two or three more dialogue passes because none of the characters really, despite like you know the book going out of its way to be like these characters have different personalities, they sound exactly the same when they open their mouths, and it just felt like it felt sort of half baked like in a way that like it's like the art is like fine. Like I think the web comic comparison is apt. To me it read like a bad Nickelodeon cartoon. That was sort of where my head went. Like this is like you know second rate Avatar or some shit like that.
Yeah, the Avatar influence is real.
I don't know if you guys have seen Dragon Prince, but it feels like a worse version of
Yeah, I
that too.
watched a couple episodes of Dragon Prince, and I can definitely see that.
Isn't that from the people who made Avatar? I thought that was good.
No,
it is. I really liked it.
Well, I mean, yeah. I was not. I just didn't really get. It didn't really grab me, so I never really watched very much of it. I think some of it was like the animation that I wasn't a huge fan of. But I like a lot of people do like it, and it is from a lot of people that worked on Avatar.
Yeah, okay. I think it's Brian and the other boy, or some writers. I don't know, but I think 3 seasons are out right now, and a 4th one might be coming.
I know a lot of people like it. I don't have a strong opinion either way.
Gotcha. It didn't do anything for me.
I didn't hate Shang-Chi. I was a bit disappointed.
I thought Shang-Chi was fine.
I thought Shang-Chi was fine.
Really? I got like 5 pages in and was like,
"What?
Fuck,
you
didn't care?
You didn't like his younger sister? She's like such a. She has your name written all over her."
No, everything was annoying. What's with Marvel comics and bad dialogue?
It's a good question.
I mostly was powered through this comic by my secretly held belief that Shang-Chi has a crush on Spider-Man, because that would explain the way that he interacts with him throughout this book.
It's so weird. Yeah.
It is. Yeah.
I don't know. I thought there was some like sort of endearing stuff about this, especially early on.
I didn't dislike this.
Like with his relationship with his sister, I thought was like kind of fun, even if she's kind of like an annoying little shit.
Yeah, I know, exactly. Like a sister type figure sometimes. But like it's also like him and Spider-Man, like some of the interaction I like, and I like the idea of these superheroes like interacting, but like just on the whole, it didn't hit enough for me, where like it felt like a long issue, and I don't think it wasn't like oversized or anything.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I've just read better Gene Luen Yang comics.
Yeah, for sure.
And I'm not sure where the whole Marvel, Shang-Chi versus the Marvel Universe comes in, but I guess we'll see Captain America next issue.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's like, I think like you can see this every issue is a team up of some kind. And they're selling it as him fighting them because that's cooler than, you know, them teaming up.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah, I thought this was okay. I wasn't like super impressed by it or anything. Well,
turn because of my love for Jean Luen Yang. But
that's fair. Is that everything? Are we getting out of here?
Real quick. Stillwater number 7.
Oh yeah, I continue. I think I'm done with this.
I thought it was all right.
Yeah, this is the book. This was the issue that came out where I realized that I still haven't caught up on it, and I'm not going to. So
fair.
I thought it was fine.
I enjoyed it well enough. I am enjoying this comic is something to read when it comes out. I feel like it's like above average enough to be cool. Like that right now, the there's basically a coup going on. Some guy left, got his army buddies, took him back in, and so they brought a shitload of weapons. They're taking over the town. Nobody can die, but you could definitely be like shot and hurt or locked up, or you know. And so it's
Have your arm chopped off.
Have your arm chopped off. There's some really stupid bits in it, like with the sword fight was really dumb. That was
God
awful. But there's also like some of the political struggle going on is cool. I like the main character well enough now. Like he's still kind of a douche, but I like. It's like, oh, he wants to leave. That's his thing. How is he going to leave? Like, I can buy that. I'm fine with that. And I want to see him succeed because the shit going on around him is kind of fucked up.
Yeah.
So I'm on board with this. I'm definitely going to keep reading it. It's not amazing, but it is. It's entertaining, and I think it does what it wants to do pretty well.
Did anyone read Radiant Black?
Yeah, I'm still reading this.
I think I also think this issue was fine.
Yeah, I thought the last issue was like really good, and this issue was a bit of a step back, but I liked it. I was a little shocked when they killed him at the end. I didn't really.
Yeah, I don't know how
that
I
was a little weird.
The book's called Radiant Black. What are you guys doing?
Well, somebody else picks up the mantle, but like. There's a new Radiant Black, but like the fact that they just killed the writer, I was like, well, all right. I mean, good for you for going
like the
for
writer,
it.
Then I think you should hop back on.
It's certainly ambitious, and I commend it for that.
Yeah, there's a lot of weird stuff in this issue. I mean, like the cosmic angle sort of feels like it comes out of nowhere.
Yeah.
I didn't, for what it's worth, I certainly did not mind that part of it. I thought, like, oh, this is kind of neat, I guess. Even if it wasn't exactly clear what was happening until, like, the last panel. I don't know, man. Like, I really liked the last issue because of, like, that character, the character focus on, like, him as a person and his relationship with his parents and his friend. And this issue feels just, like, could not be more different in the sense that, like, it does not care about that at all.
Yeah.
And then kills the main character at the end. I guess, in theory, he might have survived, but seems... When somebody else takes up the mantle, it's a pretty good sign that he did not survive that. So I don't know. It's like it's another book that feels like there's a little bit of an identity crisis going on in terms of what it actually wants to be about.
Absolutely.
So we'll see. But I think that'll do it for us. This week, at least. We'll be back, of course, next week with more comics and miscellaneous stuff. But thank you all for listening. Thank you all for joining me here. Do you guys have anything in particular you want to plug before we go out?
Have you just given up on plugs, Jean-Luc?
Yep, I'm done.
No more plugs?
I'm just going to ask if you guys have anything you want to plug. And if you guys want to say your Twitter handles, you can do that.
Follow me on Twitter at Impandanata.
Hell yeah.
Follow me on Twitter at AnanaBand, and then I'm hoping to have Toyland up within the next 2 weeks. So if you're doing this and you want to, I write books. Sometimes they're good. Toyland's fun. And yeah, I want that up by the end of this month or the very beginning of next month, but we'll see.
Cool. That's exciting. Alex, do you have anything?
Chad is finishing up on Toyland. Very exciting.
Huge.
Is that it?
Cool. Well, thank you all for listening, and we will talk to you next week.
Goodbye, everybody.
Bye. Bye.